So now I'm going to ask Dr. Val Jones to join. Are you there, Val?
I am here.
Oh, great. And I think one of the things that Christine mentioned was how it really comes down to the face-to-face relationships.
Yes.
I agree with that. And actually, I had a chance earlier this year to meet you face-to-face, which was kind of a neat thing. It's neat how social media tools can enable you to make a lot of friendships, and that those do lead to in-person, in-real-life encounters as well. So I'm glad we have another sort of pseudo-in-real-life event with you joining us by phone today.
Excellent, and you're much taller than your picture.
that always kind of surprises people.
So, I'm really glad to be here today, and I think what I wanted to talk about a little bit was coming at the putting the human touch back into the doctor-patient relationship from a slightly different angle, and that is that the business of medicine is so misaligned that it actually, I think, undermines the doctor-patient relationship because, you know, it's inconvenient, there are long lines, your doctor only spends 5 minutes with you, you get the sense that he or she doesn't care, they're not being thorough, and it's just unsatisfactory for both the doctor and the patient. And so I did something quite radical, and I joined a primary care practice here in Vienna, Virginia, which is near Washington, D.C., that has a completely different business model that I think really facilitates convenience and empowerment for the patient. And I wanted to tell you about it because it's kind of exciting.
Well, let's hear about it.
Okay. So our model is pay as you go. There is no membership fee. It is time-based billing. And that frees us up, because we don't take insurance, to meet patients as frequently as they need it in any kind of way that is appropriate and convenient for them. So if you need a house call, I can come to your house. If you need me to interact with you via phone and we both agree that that's appropriate, we can do that. We can do a webcam chat. Let's say you're traveling, you're in London, you have a question or follow-up, you know, you can come in by video to my practice and we can set up a time to talk via webcam. Texting, email, it's all made possible because I'm not tied to a reimbursement model that doesn't allow me to do these kind of things. You know, I don't have to see you in the office if it's not necessary. We found
not
that
convenient for you, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
how many people actually want to take time off work to go to the doctor?
Oh, yeah, and guess what? I could come to your office. I mean, if you needed a face-to-face visit with me or you needed some prescription refills, I know you well. You know, your high blood pressure is fairly well managed and you just need a prescription refill perhaps, or you want me to check your blood pressure, or maybe I need to follow up on an infection like cellulitis that's well managed and under control, seems to be going away with antibiotics, but I can just come in and peek on you. I mean, I can come to your office, and that's really, really convenient, and it puts patients right back at the center where they belong. I meet them on their terms. It's affordable, and the average patient in our practice spends only $300 a year on their primary care because we can do things in 5 and 10 minute intervals, which end up costing, you know, $20, $30, $40. And over the course of the year, maybe they need to see me 6 times at most, and that ends up being about $300. So what a lot of people do is they get a high deductible plan with catastrophic coverage, and then they pay cash for their primary care. They sometimes have an HSA, which makes it easier too, and end up saving thousands a year on their health insurance premiums and then pay cash for primary care. Now, this model doesn't work for everybody, of course. If you have chronic disease that, you know, you're sort of going in and out of the hospital and that kind of stuff gets expensive. But for the majority of Americans, you know, 70% of us could absolutely go with this model, save a lot of money, have better care, have more access. You know, we answer our own phones. We don't have any middlemen because we don't have to pay middlemen to be coding and billing for insurance companies, you know, to get reimbursed for freezing a wart. You know, I mean, a lot of the primary care crisis is the administrative burden that we have of trying to get compensated for these onesie twosies, you know, very low cost items, which, you know, can sort of create a whole cycle of paperwork that is cost prohibitive for primary care. So we've gotten rid of all of that, and, you know, everyone in our practice are, you know, they're true believers and love it. It's convenient. You know, they get immediate attention. I stay in touch with everybody really closely. We see them in their home environments. We see them in the office. We see them via webcam. We see them via email. We see them via text. We have our own, you know, EMR that's set up and designed for clinical efficiency rather than insurance reimbursement efficiency, and I don't spend my time trying to check boxes on review of systems if, you know, to get reimbursed. I get to type down exactly what's important. So I think it's fabulous, and I hope that more doctors will go this way.
Well, this sounds really interesting. How do you, I mean, I think the HSA thing has to make a huge difference for you, since people then do have money set aside already for this. This wouldn't work, maybe. Does it work with people who have flexible spending programs? You know, who not? I mean, sort of the old style, the use it or lose it kind of flexible spending programs for healthcare.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, it costs probably only slightly more than a copay to see us. And, you know, people who see us are perfectly able to, you know, try to get cash back from their health insurance companies and submit their claims that way. But in the at the end of the day, you know, the hassle of trying to, you know, get your $30 back when your copay is $20 or whatever, it's almost not worth it. And I think a lot of people, when they see how convenient our model is, they just, you know, a lot of them don't bother to submit claims to their insurance companies.
Sure. Well, I just joined it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, Val, we also have a question from somebody that asked about a la carte options. Can you pay one time for a question or get a prescription refilled?
Well, it's pay as you go, right? So it's time-based billing. So if it takes me, you know, 10 minutes on the phone with you, then that's 10 minutes. If it takes me an hour to get to your house, well, then that's going to be more expensive if you need a house call and we agree that I'm going to drive out there. So it's really simple. There's no need for the a la carte piece because it's really the time-based billing, sort of the way a lawyer would charge, you know?
Right.
Okay. All right. So how do you use, I mean, you mentioned webcams, you mentioned email, you know, secure portal kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How do you see the social media, the more social media-oriented tools being involved in a practice like this?
Sure. Well, for example, I used Twitter recently to let people know that our practice had H1N1 vaccine availability, and that was fun. We got some people into the office for their vaccines from Twitter, which I thought was kind of a creative use of social media, and we'd like to do more of that. You know, there's all kinds of information that we could push out to patients that isn't personal information that would be, I think, valuable. Tips of the day, alerts from the CDC about perhaps food or drug recalls. We can send that out to our patients. We can write blog posts, which would automatically feed into our Twitter account that people could follow. You know, basically we could create a podcast library, you know, There are certain things in primary care that you see a lot of and you see repetitively, you know, strep throat, for example, urinary tract infection. And, we generally have a sort of short spiel that we like to tell our patients to educate them about what to expect and the medications and when to call back and that kind of stuff. I think if we could create a podcast library of that and then have that online and then available either live for call-ins or push it out through links on Twitter and Facebook fan pages and all that kind of stuff, that would be a useful way to use social media. And then in the future, I think, I don't know if you know about SciV, but it's sort of the YouTube for healthcare, and they've got an interesting model where you can upload a video with attachments and also a slideshow that you can drop in. So if patients want to learn, let's say you do a flip cam interview with two practice partners, let's say talking about a certain condition, and you want patients to have access to an article, let's say, from the Mayo Clinic about the topic, and you think it's an excellent article, you would put a link in there so that while the patients are watching the video and perhaps some illustrations in the slideshow, or maybe Blossom Medical, for example, you can have a little animation about, you know, what's going on, and they can click on the attachment and read the Mayo Clinic article, and it's a kind of neat, interactive experience. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do with social media. And, of course, also word-of-mouth marketing is the way that a model like this really takes hold, because I think people are very much entrenched in thinking that the doctor they have to see is the one that's on their list of providers from their insurance company. And so we break that, and people realize that they can be set free, that they can see a doctor who is available to them 24/7 in any medium at their convenience. People just don't go back, you know?
Right. We have another question that asks about whether healthcare reform will make it obsolete or more prevalent to have a pay-as-you-go model. Do you have a perspective on that?
Yeah, it's hard to predict. I know that because of the economy, what's interesting is that there seems to be a lot of pressure for large employers to start considering cutting back on their benefits, meaning, you know, giving their employees catastrophic coverage and then offering them an HSA and just putting money in there and saying, okay, guys, you know, figure it out, you know, do what you can for your primary care with this. The more employers that do that, the better it is for us, because, when patients have the freedom to choose what to do with their money, I think that they will choose the high-quality, high-touch practices like ours that are also, cost-sensitive. You know, if suddenly we increase demand without increasing supply, meaning, you know, we get a 30 million more Americans insured, but we have fewer and fewer primary care physicians and nurses to take care of them, well, what's going to happen is that the lines are going to get so long and people are going to get so frustrated that they're going to start looking for alternatives. And we're an alternative. And, you know, we're reasonably priced. We're very affordable. And in a sense, that pressure could also spur on our model. So I'm hopeful that the pressures that we're under now can actually fuel a better form of care. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I may be wrong, but I sure do love practicing this way and, you know, being unfettered from old-fashioned business model that requires you to do a ton of paperwork and hire, you know, 4.5 staff per physician just to do coding and billing. I mean, it's just sort of healthcare set free.
I mean, you kind of talk about how this being, you know, the insurance being an old-fashioned business model. It seems like you're going to the older old-fashioned
That's
model,
true.
Sort of like
bring me a chicken.
Exactly.
In a way, you're right. And it's very professionally rewarding to do it this way, because, you know, now it's about the patient, it's about the relationship, it's about serving them and not, you know, serving sort of paperwork and administrative burden. So it's a fun way to practice medicine. And even if, I mean, it's not a way to get rich, that's for sure, but I'm fine with that, because I just want to be happy and I want to do the right thing by my patients, and I want to have the freedom to contact them through any modern medium. And there's just no way to get reimbursed for that in the current model. And so that's holding us back. And I feel like this model is just so much more technologically advanced, and it incentivizes us to be efficient and to adopt every new technology that makes patient education and medical treatment better. So there you have it.
All right. Well, I just would like to ask you sort of wrap up with answering one question that may enable you to sort of tie it all together. How could we use social media to support medication and testing adherence, and how does that relate to the rest of your model?
Well, again, our model very much promotes high-tech and innovative tracking and tools and all that kind of stuff, because we're not disincentivized to do that. What I think is that, oh my goodness, I'm hearing a lot of feedback there. There are some innovative tools and trackers that can be set up to ping patients when they cross a clinically significant threshold. So if you've got patients who want to track a certain variable, it would, sort of let them know if it's time to sort of talk to us about their problem or what have you. MedHelp is kind of innovative in this. MedHelp.org has a number of tools and trackers that patients use to sort of manage their health. And if we can get that integrated with our EMR and our technology-rich medical practice, it would be fabulous to have some, you know, we'd love to aim for interoperability here and have the patients tracking something specific, us knowing when they've crossed a clinically relevant threshold so that it would ping me and remind me to call them and follow up with them. Perhaps be able to sync up with the pharmacy so I can see if they have or haven't filled their prescriptions. Of course, they need to opt in for that. I don't want to be big brother, but I do want to make sure that they get the best care possible and that they're, able to get their medicines and whatnot and jump in and help them if there's any reason why they hadn't that I could solve. And imagine if we had some automated response system that was helpful in reminding people about preventive care services. Now, this may not be the best example, but, you know, hey, you just turned 50. Would you like a colonoscopy? I'm sure everyone's going to be thrilled to get that one, but similar things to that would be a valuable part of having our practice sort of integrate both patient input with pharmacy data and also preventive health reminders through mobile technology. So that's all stuff that I see coming down the pike. I think it only makes healthcare and preventive health better, and I'm looking forward to sort of working through the interoperability hurdles for all of that, but I'm optimistic that the future is going to be a much more streamlined type of medical practice and a better experience for patients.
Well, great. Dr. Vell, it is wonderful to talk with you again, and I really appreciate taking your time on Sunday night to chat about this.
Absolutely.
And look forward to our paths crossing again in the future.
Indeed, and I will jump into the chat room and be noisy.
Right. Do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks
All
so
right.
much, everyone. Okay, bye.
Great.